Even a procrastinator has to start somewhere, if he's going to start somewhere. So let's start with Darwin. Charles Darwin spent much of 1837 drawing, jotting, sketching, and scribbling in one of a series of pocket-sized leather-bound notebooks he carried around London with him. Each notebook shut with a small metal clasp, like a diary. He was living then in rented rooms in a house on Great Marlborough Street, not far from the Athenaeum Club, where rising literary and scientific men gathered to murmur great thoughts to one another amid neoclassical statuary. Darwin had just been elected to membership. One of his new clubmates would be Charles Dickens. I had guessed that the two must have met at some point, you know, Dickens, Darwin, both named Charles. But as far as I can tell, there is no record of it. I like to imagine them in conversation, bewailing the government or the food at the club. Darwin was just 28 then, and had recently returned from a nearly 5-year circumnavigation of the globe aboard the HMS Beagle, a trip that had made him a minor celebrity in scientific circles. Now he had a book contract and a growing reputation as a naturalist. As a bright and eligible bachelor, he was also getting more dinner invitations than he could accept. And he was still busy trying to make sense of what he had seen on his long voyage. Here's one mystery Darwin spent a lot of time puzzling out. On islands of the Galapagos Archipelago, 600 miles off the west coast of Ecuador, Darwin had found dozens of species of mockingbirds, one species for each island. Why so many varieties in one neighborhood? Sharp-beaked birds in one place, blunt-beaked in another. And why had other naturalists found similar variations of iguanas and tortoises and other species, each island's populations different from the next? These were just the kinds of questions Darwin had been jotting in his leather-bound notebooks, along with drawings and shorthand notes to himself and summaries of conversations with other naturalists. Now he was starting to sketch out some answers, too. "Each species changes," he wrote in one of his notebooks in the summer of 1838. Three words. Such a simple sentence, but a stunning one, too. Darwin had become convinced that the categories of creatures we know are not immutably fixed articulations of a divine plan, but the result of ongoing modification. By September, he had described in his notebooks the mechanism behind that change, the way an organism's environment favors certain random mutations and extinguishes others. He called this culling process natural selection. This was world-changing, belief-shattering stuff. But 20 years would pass before the world would hear about it. Because Darwin, having made one of the great leaps of intellectual history, did something strange. He dropped the matter. He took no steps to publish his ideas. He sent no treatises to the scientific journals, wrote no essays for the popular press, didn't start writing a book or even seek out a publisher. Not yet, anyway. He did tell a few friends what he was thinking. And he did write a brief summary of his new theory, which he called a considerable step in science. But he kept this locked away, alongside his metal-clasped notebooks. With it, he placed instructions that his work be published only after his death. It wasn't like Darwin was idle during this time. He married and started a family. He moved to a house in the country. He stayed back-achingly busy at his writing. He produced volumes on coral reefs and volcanic islands, and a 5-part work called The Zoology of the Voyage of HMS Beagle. For a periodical called The Gardener's Chronicle, he wrote on some decidedly not world-changing topics. How to grow fruit trees from seedlings, for example, and the advantages of using wire rope for well buckets. And from 1846 to 1854, Darwin was almost obsessively engaged in dissecting and describing barnacles. Darwin devoted whole years to barnacles. He became a barnacle enthusiast. Some might say he teetered on the brink of barnacle obsession. He hunched over a custom-made barnacle microscope all day, surrounded by specimens of barnacles pickled in alcohol, trying to understand the immense variety and mystery of barnacledom. He referred to them as my beloved barnacles. One of his friends said that Darwin had barnacles on the brain. Darwin spent so long studying barnacles that his children grew up thinking that all fathers live like this. On a visit to a friend's home, one of Darwin's young kids is supposed to have asked, "But where does your father do his barnacles?"